Our second case today is numbers 072875, the United States against Green, and number 073017, the United States against Patton. We'll only hear oral argument in United States against Green. The Patton case will be submitted on the briefs. Mr. Cornea.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is a case that you, as a court, have heard similar cases many times before, but I think in this case it bears out to go over some more about it. Certainly we have a defendant in this case that appears unsympathetic, and I'm sure the government's going to address that just as they did in their brief in chief. But I want to talk with a couple about the problems that occurred at sentencing. First off, there was the issue of the parsimony clause that was ignored, and that is, of course, required under 18 U.S.C. 3553A, and that states that the court is to impose a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary. And in making that determination, a district court cannot presume a guideline sentence is correct, such as a simple assumption does comport with the notion of procedural reasonableness. And I think that has been the direction that this court had been pushing for a long time. Was Mr. Green's sentence calculated correctly under the guidelines? Yes, it was calculated correctly. Is this where the review ends? And I would posit it does not end at that point. There has to be more review, and the district court must make sure a sentence is not only procedurally correct, that is calculated correctly, but that it is substantively reasonable. And this is where the parsimony clause comes into play. Is it substantially reasonable to sentence a defendant selling the same drug as another defendant selling the same drug to an enormous difference in time? I'm referring to the 101 ratio of crack cocaine to powder cocaine, and I would submit that it is not substantively reasonable to do such. And we have case law that now suggests the same, and we are going, and the courts are going through changing that at this point. So Mr. Green was sentenced under the crack guideline range, and had he been selling powder cocaine, his sentence would have been immensely different.
Did you make that argument in your brief?
I raised it in the brief towards the end, Your Honor. Yes, I did.
Where?
I believe it was towards the end, Your Honor, and I don't know the exact page number. Page 20 in the brief. And I'll quote it. It follows that if sentencing courts do not exercise their discretion in considering the implications of 18 U.S.C. 3553A, the calculations in the guidelines, such as career offender provisions or the 101 ratio, would be binding. The Booker decision, as well as the Sixth Amendment's protections, would be a nullity. We raised that argument. We raised that argument at sentencing as well. So that, while the guidelines were calculated correctly, the substantive portion of the review that has to be done independent of the guideline calculation was not done here. And we have plenty of case law now, as well as experts who are saying just that. And then I'll go into some of the other things when the district court discussed the issues of, her what I would describe as a short and almost rote discussion of the factors that I raised at sentencing in regards to Mr. Green and his background. One of the things she noted was that he had a serious criminal history. When, as an adult record, he had a Class G felony for intimidating a victim. The victim, Ms. Patton, who continued to live with him and continued to be with him. So I think, was it reasonable for her to say that he had a serious criminal history? I would submit to the court, no, it was not reasonable for her to suggest that. Was it reasonable for the court to say that there were not many indicators that Mr. Green was going to change his life or change his behavior? Well, there were indications that that was the case. As noted in the pre-sentence investigation report and as noted in arguments to the court, one of the things that Mr. Green stated to the PSR writer as well as to me and forwarded to the court was, as the drugs cleared from his mind and as he realized, could see clearly, one of the things he said was, I can't believe what I did under the influence of drugs. Moreover, he has a minor criminal history, and he showed a great deal of remorse. So I think it was unreasonable for the court to say that his past behavior was serious, and it was unreasonable for the court to say that he wasn't going to change, when there was plenty of evidence to the contrary to that, that with the with AODA treatment, with work, which he was doing, that he could change his life and that he wanted to change his life. He was actually taking HSED classes through Dane County Jail, something that most defendants don't do. And again, going to the reasonable issue, the substantive reasonable issue involved, it wasn't reasonable for the judge to say that he didn't hold down a job, because the facts outlaid is that he did hold down a job. He worked at UW Hospital as a janitor for 3.5 years. He worked at several other jobs for periods of time. He was laid off. He had a job. And so a lot of the factors that were raised as mitigating factors under 3553A, the judge said were unreasonable. Basically said they were unreasonable. And I don't think they were unreasonable, Your Honor. The court generalized about Mr. Green's background. He grew up in South Chicago, as many defendants in the Western District of Wisconsin tend to be. She didn't do any substantive review of his background, but merely stated that where he came from and the obstacles he faced him made him a risk to the community because he was, quote, used to criminality.
Was he separately charged in state court for his?
Yes, he was that. And that conviction came after this sentencing, Your Honor. And
Judge Crabb took that into account.
She did take that into account. And that raises one of the difficult issues that a defendant faces at sentencing. His version of events would happen in that parallel to a degree what happened with the officer. And if you get a chance to read the transcript, I cross-examined the officer at sentencing. But one of the problems we face in these kind of situations is if we attack it too aggressively, the officer, there's a great chance that he's going to lose his acceptance of responsibility in that case. So we have to really tiptoe around these issues. And it's a fact. That's how it works. His version of events differed from what the officer stated as far as how the car got into reverse and how it backed up. I think from my perspective, it was clear that this was more an accident than not. I mean, the car was locked when the officers first approached the car, and he unlocked the car and let the officers get into the car, and they jumped in, and off it went. So see my time is here for rebuttal, and I'll turn the time over to the government.
Thank you, Mr. Cornea. We'll hear now from Mr. Jaros.
Thank you. Peter Jaros for the United States. The issue really is one of reasonableness. I think the court pointed out here there's really two issues. One, the defendant's arguments regarding Rita really aren't well-founded. They're all basically decided by the case law since that time. In addition, the argument that somehow the sentence need not be greater than necessary has been addressed by the court before, and that's that the question is not whether another sentence could be imposed, it's whether this sentence is reasonable. It's 168 months on a properly calculated and uncontested guideline range of 168 to 210 months. He got the low end of the guidelines plus the 60-month additional hook because of the weapon. So the court, Judge Crabb, specifically went through all of the factors that the defendant wanted heard, considered them all well-founded, gave adequate, more than adequate reasons under 3553A, commenting on his background, commenting on his efforts to finish his GED, praising him where it was appropriate. In terms of the 101 ratio, the defendant really just made a passing reference to that in the beginning of his argument below, and then also sort of made this comment in his brief, as he indicates on page 20, but in no sense were either of the arguments developed at all. And under the Terry Thomas case, which the court decided approximately a month ago, that really is a waiver of that argument, does not mandate any sort of consideration under Kimbrough or otherwise. What we're really faced with here is a situation where the court gave the lowest possible sentence, not possible, but certainly the low end of the properly calculated and uncontested guidelines, gave more than adequate reason for the consideration, and the court really committed no error, and there's really nothing wrong with Rita or the decisions by the circuit courts after that. And on that basis, unless the court has any questions of me specifically, I'd simply ask that the district court's order of judgment and conviction, commitment rather, be affirmed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Yaros. How much time does counsel have? 2 minutes?
I just want to reiterate the fact that the issue of whether or not the sentence was substantively reasonable goes directly to how Mr. Green was sentenced under the 101 crack cocaine ratio. And we know that that's been repudiated at this point. So just on that fact alone, the sentence itself is unreasonable. Now, when these cases were briefed, we didn't have the Kimbrough case, we didn't have the Gall case to look to, Your Honor. But based on that fact of unreasonableness itself, I think the case needs to be remanded back for a resentencing at the very least. Thank you. Unless there's any other questions.
Apparently not. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cornea. Mr. Cornea, you were appointed, I believe, in this case, and you have the thanks of the court for your representation of your client. Our thanks indeed to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.